Gunslingers. Cluck yeah.
In Wyoming, we don't talk much about feelings. We fix things. Fences, engines, the weather. We just live with it. But lately, too many of our older neighbors are quietly giving up. Sometimes they say they're tired. Sometimes they just stop showing up. When someone starts to pull away, saying something can make all the difference. Asking, "Are you okay?" doesn't make it worse. It might just save a life. And when someone's hurting, even for a few days, can give them the time they need to heal. If you or someone you love is in crisis, call or text 988. You'll reach trained counselors day or night. Wyoming takes care of its own. Always has. Always will. A message from Wyoming Health Fairs, with support from the McMurray Foundation, Natrona Collective Health Trust, and the Wyoming Association of Broadcasters. Working together to make sure no Wyoming neighbor faces their darkest moments alone.
I'm on the scene in what used to be a calm, functional kitchen, but behind me, clear signs of cabinet fever.
We tried to ignore them, but they're oak from the 90s.
I can see the symptoms are very clear. Officials say the condition escalates quickly, moving from frustration to obsessive Pinterest scrolling.
Is there any hope?
Yes, there is. The A&B Building's Cabinet Fever Sweepstakes, sponsored by WyoTreeMD and Security State Bank. Residents are encouraged to visit the Sheridan Media Sweepstakes page and enter immediately.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Wednesday, March 4th, from the foot of the Bighorns in Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. This morning, we're joined by Sheridan Police Department Chief Travis Koltiska and Captain Tom Ringley. Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome back.
Thanks, Floyd.
Morning, Floyd.
Now, we're going to continue the SPD review of 2025, and today we're going to look at violent crime statistics. Captain, how did the Sheridan Police Department's violent crime statistics look in 2025 compared to the average? Now, when you come up with your averages, how far back do you reach, sir?
We go back 3 years, so we compare it to 22 through 24. And one of the reasons for that is you kind of want to compare apples to apples. If we start, well, while it is relevant as to what happened 10 years ago, there are a lot more variables at play, to include populations, societal trends. Say, mm-hmm. for instance, people drank a lot more 10 years ago than they do now. So that's why we only go back 3 years. And, you know, for the homicides, rapes, robberies, and aggravated and robberies, they're all down, but you have to consider that the sample sizes are very small. Unfortunately, we had one report that was considered a homicide, which was the tragedy at 5th and Main, where the pedestrian was killed. But then one rape, which is down from 2 for the 3-year average, and no robberies. And remember, a robbery is different from a burglary. A robbery is a crime against a person, while a burglary is essentially a crime against property. So that's 2.
Yeah.
2 cases. And then when we get into aggravated assault, we had 18 compared to 17 for the prior 3-year average. But that's a 5% average or increase, once again, because of sample mall. But one thing that we're really pleased about is our simple assaults, which is the lower level. The assaults are down from 179 for the three-year average to 135, and that is a 24% decrease. And those are the incidents that most of us will probably see on a weekend night in a bar or a dispute between people in a residence. So that's good, because we want to we decrease the lower level violent crime, then it's more likely going to decrease the higher level crimes. Is another form of, we make those arrests as a form of early intervention.
Mm-hmm.
So generally it was good, but you know, in regards to a homicide or a rape, one's far too many, and we're Absolutely. Trying to get those numbers down to zero.
Chief, is there, is it, do you, sit the leadership down and kind of set goals at the beginning of a year? And if so, what goal did you set for the department for reducing violent crime? And do you feel that you came close to it? Do you feel that you've at least achieved some paramounts of that goal?
So our goals, most of our goals have, obviously, that is with times change, they fluctuate as well. But we've had pretty consistent goals because when you're looking at our main core functions in policing, you want to maintain a solid foundation of that. That's, I mean, our overarching goal is public safety. And that involves prevention and suppression of crime. So those goals have remained relatively consistent in many years. When you start talking about other forms of policing with community interactions, you know, we have different goal setting discussions about how we want to increase our interactions with the community, how we want to do this or do that, and different strategies in place. Most of our goals themselves have maintained consistency through the years, but it's strategy discussions that change. How are we changing our tactics or methodology in order to keep up with what new trends we're seeing? And so that's more of our discussions, not the actual changing of the goals, because we want to continue to reduce violent crime. We want to continue to reduce crime. Yeah, if we could have zeros across the board in every category, might put us out of a job, but that would make me happy, right? That would be great. Is it realistic? Unfortunately, it's not. But if we can do everything we can to just keep those at a prevent victimization of our community members, that's what our goals are. So we maintain them, and our goals have been to try to continue to see a 5% suppression of violent crimes annually. And you keep chalking that down. Everybody's like, well, you get down to zero eventually. Well, you don't, because it's always, as the captain said earlier, the numbers, smaller numbers means there's a smaller gap in those percentages, right? So we can continue to have that 5% goal and continue to suppress crime, even if it gets very, very low. And, that's success to us. It's just continue to see those numbers drop.
Now, when it comes to the social changes that have occurred between the two of you, we have over 40 years of experience on the street. As technology started to kind of dawn, turn a corner, now you've got a computer in your hand. Now everyone's got a computer in their hand. Would you say the technology has been advantageous to law enforcement, or has there been some setbacks?
Well, I mean, I think with anything, and you see this, it doesn't matter what you're talking about, as technology advances, nefarious activity also advances with technology. And so then we have to figure out, how do we utilize it? How do we leverage it to catch back up? So yes, I mean, it gives us some immediate advantages, whether it's, some of the biggest things is like surveillance, you know, the increases in the surveillance cameras, increases, our body cams have been a big technology boost, in that now something that we didn't have that, you know, we observed when we were on the street back in the day, now a jury can see it, right? Stuff with phone captures and how we can obtain data of criminal activity that's stored electronically. Those technologies have increased. But again, as that increases, just like our scams, as we become more technologically advanced, so does the people that are trying to utilize those means for nefarious reasons. So it's a give and take, right? We're constantly just kind of leapfrogging over each other. I'd say overall, technology has been a benefit to efficiency as much as anything, right? So it's not necessarily the techniques, but it's like it becomes a force multiplier more than anything else. You know, that I'd say that's what the biggest advantage of it is.
Speeding up certain processes,
right,
and getting things done faster in the office so you can get out there.
What may have taken an officer 3 hours to do 15 years ago with some, and it's not overly complicated things, but with just some technological advances, now that same thing can be done in an hour and a half. It cuts the time that they need to spend inside the office getting stuff ready. And a lot of that is the processes we've developed over the years too, to increase those efficiencies, because our goal is to get that uniform officer on the street.
Yeah, an example is just a lot of the data entry. We've moved away from the officers to either records or dispatch. So, and there's a lot of data. I mean, name, date of birth.
Right. Yeah.
Basically coding the right crime or the right nature and circumstances. We've tried to alleviate all of that burden from officers, because nothing's going to replace people out, people on the street at 3 a.m. looking for someone doing something wrong, or any other time for that matter, and also being seen as a deterrent during busier times of day. So I think people probably think some little robot looking thing's ever going to replace an officer, but that they're not. They can't think critically. And they also can't communicate, and we wouldn't anyway.
That human intuition is so valuable.
Yep. And also the human communication and feedback with one another. And that's what's important. And that's why we hire the people that we do hire.
And on that, the gut feeling, how powerful is that among officers? Do you encourage follow your gut?
In some circumstances, it's everything. We catch vibes. And it's sometimes, the proverbial spidey senses start tingling, especially on traffic stops, or when you're being lied to. And it's this, we're processing information. We're not just not doing it consciously. And so that's extremely important.
Now, getting back to our statistics. Sorry, I do get sidetracked quite. Oh, one more thing before I do lose.
Let's stay sidetracked. Yeah, let's go.
The Ring Cam program that you guys operate. Speaking of technology, I just wanted to remind people that this exists.
Yes,
that's completely voluntary. If you happen to capture a crime or something going on your Ring Cam, you can notify the PD.
Not only that, but also if you have a camera set up outside your house and you'd be willing to allow law enforcement to look at it should something happen in your neighborhood that you may not be aware of, we're maintaining a database of that. So if you're like, hey, I have a Ring camera and I don't care if, they need to utilize that to try to solve a potential violent crime. And because what we will do is, we've utilized that type of technology in situations. People who commit crimes most often travel to or from the place where they commit the crime and to home. So if we can capture vehicles, we have a vehicle description, we can capture vehicles, we can capture people walking. It oftentimes will help us solve crimes by having those home cameras, whether it's Ring or, we use Ring because that's one of the main vendors that's well known, or whatever vendor you utilize. But yeah, if you're out there listening and you're like, hey, I have a camera on my front door and the officers are welcome to look at it or reach out to me if they're investigating your crime. That's the only reason we're going to do it. We're not going to be like, hey, can I just come look at your camera?
Yeah, can I?
We don't have the time for that. It's like if we're out knocking on the doors looking for cameras, something pretty serious has happened.
Yeah.
And we need the public's help.
Chief, how would someone contact you to get into this?
They can call dispatch. That's 672-2413. Say, hey, I heard him talking about having the doorbell camera program or the surveillance camera program. Yes, my camera is available for law enforcement use if need be. Here's my name and the contact information and address.
Now, jumping back, factors may contribute to aggravated assault incidents within a community like Sheridan County that you've seen in your experience in the past?
Alcohol. It's usually alcohol and relationships. Aggravated assault is when one harms another or threatens to harm another with a weapon that can cause serious bodily injury or worse. A lot of time law enforcement gets blamed for not preventing what goes on behind closed doors. But I've said before, thankfully we have a very robust constitution that prevents us from, being all seeing and all prying. So a lot of very few of these ag assaults, are in public. They're usually behind closed doors. I wasn't being flippant when I said alcohol. It's almost all is involved, but it's an irrational act that we have a hard time figuring out. But usually it's just escalated from a lower level argument and turned into something more serious.
Now, I've got to take a break, but one thing that we go over at least once a year, and it's usually during this show, the differences between aggravated assault, assault, battery.
Yep.
There's a lot of lingo out there. Not everybody knows it.
It's
Captain, what are those?
An assault can be a threat or a swing and a miss, as I call it. A battery is a swing and a connect where someone sustains an injury. And an aggravated assault is where a weapon's involved. There's also unlawful contact where contact is made, but there's no injury, such as a push. Like okay. If I walk up to you in public and push you and for no reason.
Maybe like a grab by the arm and a shake.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, but far and away the most serious is that the aggravated assault is because a weapon is used, or serious bodily injury without a weapon has taken place as well.
Yeah, that happens on occasion where what would have been a battery, a fight, gets somebody takes it really, really too far and it causes serious bodily injury, which means that's can be life-threatening or results in physical maladies that are very serious and require extensive medical stuff. So, yeah, if somebody gets, oftentimes fights escalate to that and that becomes a aggravated assault at that point or like Captain said, with a weapon being involved.
And one thing, you know, everyone should know, but if they don't, no one has the right to touch you in any way without your consent. If such a thing happens, you can contact the SPD in regards to that.
If you're in a place where you are legally allowed to be.
If you are, yep, there you go. I'm glad you threw that in there. All right, more with our SPD right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Ready to level up your career?
At First Federal Bank and Trust, our people are our greatest strength, and we're hiring full and part-time tellers to join our team.
Enjoy great pay, outstanding benefits, and a culture that empowers and supports you every step of the way.
Because at First Federal, we invest in you with the tools, training, and opportunities to grow both personally and professionally.
Take the next step at eFirstFederal.bank and discover a career that truly invests in you.
First Federal Bank and Trust is an equal opportunity employer.
I'm here with Candace Kindred for Teriyaki Madness. It's March, the days are longer, and I'm craving something fresh.
Tommy, hi, then you need Teriyaki Madness. Grilled, made-to-order chicken, steak, tofu, salmon, crisp veggies, your choice of rice or noodles, all built fresh just the way you like it.
Flavor that wakes you up faster than a Wyoming spring wind.
Exactly. Big portions, bold flavors, and healthier options that actually taste amazing.
Now that's something to get excited about.
Stop in today and taste the difference.
Teriyaki Madness. Fresh, fast, and made just for you.
Are your taxes still on your to-do list? You're not the only one. But don't worry. H&R Block makes filing them fast and never a drain on your time. No matter if you meet with us in person or drop them off. Plus, we're right in the neighborhood, giving you a convenience and confidence to cross those taxes off your list. So let us help lighten the load. Make an appointment at H&R Block today.
You two going to the Shop-O-Minium open house Saturday? I went last week.
I need serious shop space and room to run my business.
And I want my own area for crafts and my home gym.
That's what this is. Wide open shop layout, high ceilings, built solid. You design the interior to fit exactly what you need.
That sounds like it might just work.
And for all the things that I want to work on.
Exactly. Go Saturday, starting at 11, Shop-O-Minium open house, up on East Ridge Road next to Coca-Cola, or contact Donna Garland at Sheridan Realty Associates.
This public service announcement brought to you by Atlas Chiropractic. Your healing begins when you pick up the phone.
The IRS and the AAR Tax Aid Foundation have partnered with the Hub on Smith to offer free tax preparation and assistance. To make an appointment, please call 672-2240. You will then get a return call to finalize the appointment, so be sure to answer. You will be asked to pick up a packet prior to your appointment, and we have a team of IRS certified volunteers happy to assist you.
Good morning. Welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. This morning, we're looking back at violent crime statistics for the 2025 year with Sheridan Police Department Chief Travis Koltiska and Captain of the Force, Tom Ringley. Please keep in mind, folks, these are for the city of Sheridan, not Sheridan County as a whole. Now, the captain brought it up in our first part this morning. It is something a lot of individuals deal with every single day. Captain, what role does alcohol really play in the types of incidents that we're responding to in the street?
It plays a big role in instances where people physically resist an officer. It's close to 100%, and that's been one consistent even from 10 years ago.
That's incredible.
And that's where they've made the decision to push back or hold their hands in or whatever.
Or actively fight, attempt to assault officers.
They're going
to
make some sort of stand right here. Mm-hmm. Now, what did the 2025 statistics show regarding DUI arrests compared with recent years?
That's another thing we're pleased about is that's still trending down.
Fantastic. That is so great to hear.
It's the previous 3-year average was 168, and last year we had 162, which sounds like a small drop. It's only 6, which is roughly a 3.5% drop. But anecdotally, from 10 years ago, it was probably nothing for us to get 250 DUIs in a year. If not, in fact, when Chief was in a town in the southwest part of the state not long ago, one of their local government people, Sheridan, all you guys arrest people for DUIs, and yes, we do. That's the main threat to everyday people. The one thing that is consistent, our average blood alcohol concentration is a 0.15. And that's been consistent over the last 10 years too. So we're talking about twice the legal limit. We're not sitting around waiting to poach someone that's on the borderline. These people are clearly intoxicated. And that's another statistic we would love to get down to zero, or at least keep having that downward trend.
Now, when it comes to, and I don't know if your information has this directly in front of you, I believe it was last year, sometime in the spring as well, we were talking about the average age of the individual that is being arrested for DUI by the SPD being a little older.
I think it's on the increase. When we were, 20, 25 years ago, we would rarely see anyone over 65 arrested for DUI. And it would really stand out if someone was over 70. But now it seems like the average age is just going up and up and up. And on the bottom end, less young people, more older people and less younger people being arrested for DUI or any other alcohol offenses, such as public intoxication.
We can only hope that our public campaigns against DUIs and then people are finally coming to the understanding of the dangers that presents, not only themselves, but them around, everyone that they're around. And hopefully that's been a big contributing factor to these decreases, with which what we truly feel is fewer younger people that are choosing to drink and drive. And that's our goal. We want to break that cultural acceptance of driving under the influence of alcohol here in the city. And so I hope we're having some effect. I think hopefully our numbers are showing that. And, we will continue to maintain a strong enforcement effort towards those for the risks that they cause to our community for that very reason. And so we're not going to stop, right? Yeah. No, we're ever vigilant, and it's going to be a continued thing that we're going to focus on, continue to stress to our officers the need to take active measures to prevent DUIs and to search them out, get the training. We're going to provide the training necessary. But again, not like we've spoken on here many, many times, our overarching goal is education, voluntary compliance. If we have voluntary compliance, that is a win. And so if we can continue that campaign to get people to find alternate means if they choose to partake, we want people to enjoy themselves, but find alternative means to get home.
And I think a lot of people out there, not everybody, but a lot of people might not understand, hey, yeah, we've got this number down, but that doesn't mean we're going to stop the campaign.
No,
because
maybe even push harder to see if we can get that last couple of percentages down even more.
Yeah, because it takes one tree. This one incident that ruined the lives of end of life of a person, or drastically changed not only them, but their family and mm-hmm. their friends and the whole community. We're still, you know, it feels like Sheridan's growing a lot, but we're still a small community with maybe 3 degrees of separation between everyone, it seems like sometimes. So that's why we wanted at Zero. Once, and just like the homicides and the rapes, one's too many.
Yeah.
And our goal is to prevent it.
And just because that number hits zero, folks, does not mean you're going to stop seeing the posts. You're going to stop seeing the public awareness campaigns. It just shows that those things work and deserve the investment of time and resources. And another thing I just want to say, I know they hold victims impact panels every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
If you or someone in your life, maybe they're just not seeing the impact that they're driving under the influence is having on others, take them to one of these, because you will see the impact. People, brave individuals who have lost loved ones or been hit themselves, get up there and talk about their experience, and it stays with you. So
I've even, you know, oftentimes offenders who have caused tragic loss to others have gotten in front of those victim impact panels as well, or have given talks. That those are, yeah, I mean, people that were actually offenders, and those have been very impactful, I think, in a lot of ways as well.
And they happen a lot, folks. I don't know who schedules those or who keeps track on those anymore, but you can find them if you're looking for them. They do happen. Okay, moving on down the line. Captain, you gave a pretty high number for incidences where alcohol was a major contributing factor in that pushback from individuals to our officers. These are the individuals who maybe get a little what we call liquid courage.
Yeah. Now, and let's differentiate. What I discussed earlier was physically resisting officers. With interference can range everything from physically resisting to lying about your name to running. It's a wide gamut. Not all these people are violent offenders. Some people just lie about their name. But there's still, that's still interfering with the duties of a peace officer. But just by a quick hand count Monday, 30 out of 38 incidents in where we've had an interference charge, 30 of them involved alcohol.
My goodness.
So it just shows that it's a bad decision and not thinking straight. I mean, withholding your name on a citation to think you're going to get out of a citation is just going to lead to another citation for interference. So, you know, it's this poor decision making. Running from us is, we're generally find out who you are, and you know, another way technology helps us. So just cooperate with us, and we get it. More than likely you're going to walk away without worse a citation. But yeah, just alcohol leads to poor decisions.
And this isn't one of those obey things that we're seeing. Basically, what the captain is saying is if you feel that you've been wronged, if you feel that something is,
there's a difference
right
between obeying and complying. You know, even obeying makes it sound like we're the law enforcement overlords or something.
Right.
No, complying is just working with us to end a situation so we can all go about our business.
And you will have your day in court, folks.
There is a process contesting if you feel that you are, for whatever reason, that this is an incorrect decision. Not only is there a process in court, we've said on here many times, there's a process to file a complaint with the police department. Should you feel that there are inappropriate actions, they will be all of them are fully investigated every time. So there is a process. What we don't want is you to, because out of those interference charges and the ones that were providing false information, 100% of the times that we had to physically use force, they were under the influence of alcohol.
Wow.
So there's where that step up, that's where the alcohol step up comes, right? And that liquid, as you called it, liquid courage on there a little bit earlier. But yeah, there's a process if you think that something that's going on with your interaction is incorrect. Follow the process. Don't don't get physical.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm going to let you know right now, Police don't fight fair. They're going to bring their friends. I'll guarantee it. It's not worth it, folks. Just comply. And again, if you have a complaint, if you have, if you feel that you're going to fight it, then go fight it in the courts where that process takes place. Now, I'm running short on time with you. Is there anything regarding the violent crime statistics of 2025 that you would really like the public to know before I let you go?
You know, I think overall, again, we've said it many times, we have a great community we live in, and then most often people are able to resolve their disputes without turning to violence. But, you know, these things have tragic impacts. Even what starts as a simple assault can escalate into very tragic results. And we want to ensure that, you know, we're not only here to interact and take care of something at, We want to get there before it becomes physical. Call us before it gets physical. Let us come help try to mediate. Let us come help try to take care of things prior to it getting physical. Don't wait till after the fact to notify us. And we will also, you know, one of the big impacts I think we've seen on simple assaults, which, you know, we had almost a 25% reduction. A lot of times those, that classification includes domestic batteries. Our intimate partner violence program that the Lieutenant Hill had spoken about here before. I think we try to provide resources and we try to provide education to prevent crime and prevent violent crime as well. So let us work with you.
And that gut feeling, folks, is not isolated to police officers. If you're in a situation and you get that gut feeling that something is about to turn violent, notify the police before it does. It is not an inconvenience for them to show up, say hi, walk through the area, make sure everything's okay. You could be helping to prevent something horrible from happening. Thank you both so much for coming in this morning. It's always a pleasure seeing you. These are sometimes very tough conversations that we have to have, but they're effective.
Always happy to be here, Floyd.
Thanks, Floyd.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to speak with Johnson County Commission Chairman Bill Novotny. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
This is Maren Borsheim with First Federal Bank and Trust.
And I'm Nicole Pierce. Buying a home just got more affordable.
With the Mortgage Rate Relief Program, qualified buyers may receive an interest rate up to 1.5% below the current market rate with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage.
That could mean lower monthly payments on your primary residence.
If your household income qualifies, we'll walk you through everything.
Call us for all the details at First Federal Bank and Trust or visit efirstfederal.bank.
First Federal Bank and Trust, helping you get home. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
A great meal that benefits a great cause. The Knights of Columbus Lenten Fish Fry Dinner, 4:30 to 7 p.m. this Friday, March 6th at 301 East Brundage in Sheridan. Tickets are $15 a person or $75 for a family of five or more. Kids five and under are free. Dine in or take out. Proceeds benefit the Holy Name Catholic School Tuition Assistance Fund. For shut-in delivery, call 672-0936. The Knights of Columbus Fish Fry Dinner, this Friday at Rodellini Hall, where the Knights of Columbus meet.
Mandy Kolziska from Century 21 BHJ Realty brings you this Pet of the Week from the Dog and Cat Shelter. Two-year-old Pisces is the life of whatever party you throw. This German Shepherd mix loves everyone she meets except cats. Gizmo is an 11-year-old kitty with a lot of life left in him. Although blind, he's looking for a warm, cozy home and someone to love him. His handsome face and huge saucer eyes will win your heart.
When it comes to Wyoming, your roof takes the hits. Hail, wind, snow, and sun. That's why Brandon 307 Roofing and Exteriors installs metal roofing built to last. From commercial-grade R-panel, residential metal roofs, and our impact-resistant 24-gauge standing seam systems, every option is engineered for strength, longevity, and performance. When you want protection that lasts a lifetime, call Brandon 307 for your free inspection. Quality materials, quality installation, local experience you can count on. Visit Brandon307.com. Brandon 307, Branding Wyoming, one home at a time.
This March, let Mossholders help you update your dining room or kitchen. All dining room and kitchen furniture is currently on sale. So whether you need just a couple bar stools or an entire entire dining set for 12 people, or something in between, Moss Holders has options. With a wide in-stock selection, you might find your favorite piece right on the showroom floor. If not, you can special order your perfect group and still save. If you need more dining room storage, you can add a matching sideboard or server to go with your new set. That's Moss Holders Dining Sale, going on now. Moss Holders, furniture is our passion.
Before there was a Frackleton's restaurant, this building was home to Dr. Frackleton, the sagebrush dentist who patched up cowboys, Native American chiefs, and anybody tough enough to sit still. No frills, no shortcuts, just steady hands and work done right. That same Frackleton spirit lives on today. Good food prepared with care, well-poured drinks, friendly service, and world-class cuisine. Frackleton's, Main Street, downtown Sheridan.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. First segment part this morning, by phone, all the way from the flagpole in Cheyenne, we are joined by Johnson County Commission Chairman, Mr. Bill Novotny. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Floyd. It is great to be with you today.
You know, how long you been down there?
Off and on for about 20 days. So come home when we can, but some really, really important business going on. And I've got some really good news to share with you that just happened about 30 minutes ago.
Really? Okay, I'm ready for that. What do we got?
We were able to get a conference committee approved on the capital construction bill. And why this is just so critical, Floyd, as you know, that's where that $86 million for the rebuild on the domiciliary at the Veterans Home in Buffalo. That was where that money is at. It got held up a little bit because there was a disagreement about some money that is headed to Gillette to build a STEM building in honor of probably one of the greatest public servants in the history of Wyoming, and that's Mike Enzi at the Gillette College over there. But they were able to reach an agreement. They're going to hopefully pass that agreement in the House and the Senate here very shortly, and then it's headed on to the governor, and we're very, very confident that he will sign the bill and will finally get to work on the domiciliary.
That is fantastic news. For folks who may just kind of be joining the domiciliary conversation, how long would you say that Johnson County and the veterans over there have been waiting on this to get through?
You know, we've been a top priority of the State Construction Department for about 10 years, but really the last 8 years fighting, and we would get very close. We were there last year, and then they decided to not do a supplemental budget, so that killed the project completely. So I really feel like I've been working on this for about 8 years.
Wow. Almost a decade. This has been kind of a bit of a fight, a battle going on. Now that we've got the funding, do we have all $86
million? We do, plus construction department has plans. They have a contractor ready to go. So I'm very optimistic that they'll get to work. You know, we've watched as the legislature has delayed, unfortunately, we've seen the price of this project go up. And what is critical about this is that the majority of the money in this project will then be reimbursed by the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs. So it's not like the state of Wyoming is going to be out of $86 million. They're going to get a portion of that back once the project is completed. But we've just watched over time this go from a 30 to a 50 to an $80 million project. And that's that horrible impact of inflation on construction costs. It's not only hurting projects like this. I know it's hurting folks that are trying to build attainable housing in Northeast Wyoming, that they are getting crushed by increased finance charges because of interest rates and then material costs. So we got to get this going, because the longer they delay, the greater the price tag on this is. And let's be honest, it was a true disservice to the residents up there to not address the deficiencies in that facility, the health, life, and safety, the fact that it's not ADA compliant. you know, you want to cut down on our labor costs up there. You don't know how hard it is for the facility staff to keep that building and all the different systems cobbled together so that the residents up there can be comfortable. So this is a huge win for the veterans across Wyoming, but also a major win for Buffalo and Johnson County.
And, you know, I believe it's finally going to truly reflect how so many of us feel about our veterans. These individuals have earned the right to have a comfortable living space. If that's the least thing that we can do, I say we do it to the fullest extent. I do realize that I am a little bit biased on that, but I know that there's other people out there who they themselves did not serve, so they want to make sure that everyone's taken care of up there. Sir, have you seen these plans? I mean, it's been quite a while. Have you laid eyes on these?
I have not seen the latest draft, but I'm certainly going to have a conversation with construction services, and we'll get a look at that. And I know there will be some community meetings to explain the project. And, you know, the nice thing is they're going to do it in a way that it's going to try to not disrupt the lives of the folks that are up there now. So you won't see them leaving our community while they're doing this. And, you know, the difference between skilled nursing and the folks that are in the domiciliary, you know, these are folks that can take care of themselves for the most part, or some of our most vulnerable veterans are the ones. Maybe at one point they found themselves homeless. Those are the folks that we are protecting by having this domiciliary available to them. So just a great facility.
I'm really excited about this one, sir. When we have dates, would you mind sharing those with me? Because I think that's really what's going to make it real for me. When we've got some dates, shovels in the ground, and people out there putting up some walls.
Absolutely. So we can actually see it going.
Absolutely. I want to put eyes on this. That deserves a trip. Now, let's talk about what else is going on down there. We know some legislators are trying to get things done. What was the purpose of your visits over the past 20 days to session?
The big impact for our local communities is what's called direct distribution, and that's a share of state revenues that flows back to us to help pay for the essential services. It helps Claremont, Casey, Sheridan, Buffalo, Johnson County, Sheridan County. And so this year we were finally able, and we have to come every 2 years to fight to get those dollars. We were finally able to get a statute written in a way that we have a guaranteed revenue share now. It's 8% formula of a Madden matrix, which is complicated. It goes back to Mike Madden, our member of the Buffalo City Council now, who previously served as revenue chair in the legislature. But we now have what we believe to be steady and consistent funding that you will know that we can budget on, and that we're not going to have to come down here every 2 years, hat in hand, and beg for that money. So that was a big win for us. The governor's going to sign that bill tomorrow at 1:30. The other huge thing, and we know this just because we've just dealt with the Little Crazy Fire. There's a couple of great bills that are going to be hopefully signed by the governor very soon. Creates a couple fire modules that will have fast attack to get out and put out. We're doing some hopefully things that are going to help the state retain more firefighters by helping with pensions and hazard pay and time off. And Kelly Norris, who's our state forester, of course we knew her because she was the forester there in Buffalo prior to that, really did incredible work working with the fire districts across the state to figure out after last year's fire season, how do we prevent that? And going into fire season, I'm very, very concerned. But hopefully, Floyd, we're going to have some more tools so that we can protect property, rangeland, critical for wildlife, agriculture, and be able to get those fires put out initially rather than when they blow up and become record setters.
Now, I'm going to ask you about that Little Crazy Fire, but before I do that, all that information that you just gave us, all I tend to think, when the government does do these good things, is how long do you think it will take to get these teams formed up, get them the equipment that they need to execute their mission, and get them fielded?
So the nice thing is most of these bills have an enactment that they can begin on this with the governor's signature. Some of the bills they do, there's delays on implementation. Some of it's July 1. But on most of the fire stuff, they're going to be able to get to work right away on putting together those teams and changing those retirement programs, different things. So we'll see those benefits very, very quickly.
That's fantastic to hear. Speaking of fires, before we go on to the current one, did the fires, the house draw, the elk fire, did those come up in legislature during these discussions at all, being maybe used as an example? Hey, this is what's going to happen if we're not on top of it, or they could spread this far. Did those come up?
There was discussion, and whether it was on cheatgrass, certainly I know as those fire bills were discussed, talked about having those resources could have helped in some of those initial attacks. And certainly I know Representative Conley talked about, as Little Crazy was burning, she was talking about that because they were debating one of the fire bills on the floor. You hate to be the poster child in those things when you have those fires like elk or house draw, but they were very, very much on the minds of legislators as they considered things this session.
Absolutely. And maybe that even could possibly help. As long as, for me, a big portion was getting the proper resources to our weed and pest districts so that they can take care of this this invasive grasses issue long before it becomes a major issue later on down the line and costs twice, maybe even three times as much to try and get those taken care of. Speaking of the Little Crazy fire, sir, what exactly was it? How big did it get?
So we were looking at about 180 acres, give or take, and yesterday considered the fire 100% contained. We were so fortunate. We had flurry bombers in there. We had assets from around the state. Initially, when that fire started, they had called for a chopper. It was too windy. They couldn't get the chopper in there. But what was so critical about attacking that fire so hard, because it was right up against the face, burning into the Bighorn National Forest, and with the lack of snowpack we have right now, Floyd, had we got that into the forest and in some other areas, it really could have been quite destructive. There were some homes in the area that were also at risk, and they were able to protect all of those assets. So you hate to see that we've already started fire season when we're that was started the end of February into March, but that's the reality on the ground right now. And so we're so thankful for the work of the Johnson County Fire District Number 1. I know Powder River Fire sent up some assets, and then we had assets from around the state, as well as help from the Forest Service and the BLM, and that's what it takes. And you just hope that we're not dealing with things like that all summer long.
Absolutely. And I do realize that there's always going to be those armchair quarterbacks out there. But the fact of the matter is, you know, when the house draw fire was going, when the elk fire was going, I spoke to the leaders on the ground who were out there battling these things. I think we had the right people in the right time at the right moment. Even though those fires got huge, they did everything from what I saw. I'm sure that there's a lot of things that they saw that they wanted to adjust, but from what I saw, it looked like they were doing everything right out there. And I always want to appreciate the men and women who brave those things every year. They may have a busy year coming up. Has the Bighorn National Forest approached you as a commissioner as of yet and had some of those tough discussions?
You know, we are real fortunate with that office in Buffalo and the fact that we have a full-time ranger there, that we are constantly in talks with them. Right now, we're trying to work with them on some roadless stuff. There's some areas around the Clear Creek watershed that they were not able to treat when we did that urban interface program under the Good Neighbor Authority. But yes, we have a great relationship with our BLM. We have a great relationship with our Forest Service in those local offices, and we're talking to them all the time.
All right. That's fantastic to hear, sir. I know we had other issues to cover, but I've run out of time with you. I appreciate you. I appreciate the time that you've given with us on this busy day. Thanks for being down there and fighting for the good fight, sir.
Well, that's what we got to do because we love where we live, Floyd, but we got to fight for it, and we got to make sure that people participate in the process. So I'm just so happy with some of the outcomes that we're going to see coming home to Northeast Wyoming when the legislature gavels out.
Absolutely. And giving those veterans a nice place to live is a huge issue. And I greatly appreciate all of your efforts and the efforts of everyone involved to ensure that that got done. Thank you.
Good to talk to you, Floyd. Have a great day.
You as well. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Sheridan, I'm Nicole Pierce.
And I'm Maren Borsheim with First Federal Bank and Trust.
Dreaming about owning your first home?
The Mortgage Rate Relief Program could lower your interest rate by 1.5% below the current market rate with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage.
That means real monthly savings.
It's available to qualifying homebuyers purchasing a primary residence.
Let's see if you qualify.
Funds are limited, so stop in, call us, or visit efirstfederal.bank.
First Federal Bank and Trust. Homeownership just got more affordable. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Wow! Get ready to swing! The Spicy Pickles featuring Hannah Rodriguez are bringing their vintage jazz vibes and big band energy to the YO stage Thursday, March 12th at 7 p.m. Known for their playful arrangements, tight grooves, and danceable rhythms, the Pickles are a revival of the golden age of jazz with a fresh, contemporary edge. The Spicy Pickles featuring Hannah Rodriguez, Thursday, March 12th, 7 p.m. Get your tickets now at the YO box office or online at yotheater.com.
Stop by the Bighorn Home Builders Home and Garden Show for some fresh ideas, March 13th through the 15th at the Sheridan Ramada Plaza. Enter to win a $1,000 certificate to Landon's Greenhouse or purchase a raffle ticket from a home builder member for a $6,000 10-foot by 12-foot garden shed donated by Blowdorn Lumber, with proceeds going to Sheridan College construction technology students, or cornhole boards built by the Buffalo High School geometry and construction class.
Let this be the day that I learn the secret. A family that lives forever. A spring that stops the clock. Imagine the price the world would pay for a single drop.
Winnie Foster, imagine it. No growing up, no goodbyes. Just every tomorrow you could ever dream of.
But Jesse...
Find out what happens when time stands still. Tongue River High School presents Tuck Everlasting.
Performing March 12th, 13th, and 14th at 6 p.m. in the Tongue River High School Auditorium.
Grab your tickets at the Tongue River High School office or through the TRHS website.
Don't fear death, fear an unlived life.
Tuck Everlasting is presented by arrangement with Concord Theatricals. Book by Claudia Shear and Tim Federle. Music by Chris Miller. Lyrics by Nathan Tyson. Based on the novel Tuck Everlasting by Natalie Babbitt.
What is the latest and greatest, or even not so great? Hi, I'm Rich DeMuro with Rich on Tech. Be sure to listen this Saturday on
News Talk 930.